My name is David Livingstone, independent researcher. I've been at it for 30 years now. I've written 5 books. I've just published my latest, which is Ordo Op Cal, which is actually in 6 volumes. So I had no intent of making a book that big. I was always trying to keep it small and digestible for my audience, but the connections just kept going and going and going and going. I can't believe that even though I've been at it all this time, I was really just amazed to see how many new topics and threads that I was still able to discover. And so, you know, even though I thought I had covered a lot of the topics, you know, pretty thoroughly in my previous books, I would say that all my previous books combined only add up to about 15% of this recent one. So a whole slew of new connections that I was able to find. And really the central theme that I've been able to sort of isolate is what I call the conspiracy. And Tony, I think this has to do with what, you know, we were intending to talk about, but basically, and what's happening today, which is to what extent those personalities that are involved, the most popular personalities are involved in spreading information about the conspiracy, are deeply tied to the conspiracy. And I found that this is nothing new. From what I've seen, this is a consistent pattern that goes back to the beginning of the 20th century. And consistently throughout that century, you find that all the leading personalities involved in discussing, researching, supposedly, quote unquote, exposing the conspiracy, have direct links to it, and it's fundamentally fascist.
Now, look, one of the things I think is interesting about you, David, is that you had quite an interesting education, at least, you know, kind of post-school education. Can you just tell us a little bit about that?
If I think what you're referring to is I went to a university, Concordia, Montreal, and it had a unique college. They called a liberal arts college, and it was designed to sort of revive the classical liberal arts education. And I had no idea at the time. What was unique about it is that, you know, typically when you go to university program, if you study history or most of the programs, let's say, you choose almost a random selection of courses. You know, there's a particular set number of courses you have to take, but it's not planned. It's not organized. So what was unique about this program is that the 3 years, you had several courses in parallel, like history, art, philosophy, and they all ran in parallel. And each year covered a different segment. So Bible to the French Revolution to the 20th century, and then 20th century. So what was important about that for me, the value of it, was that it gave me an understanding of the key themes of what is understood as Western civilization. Because basically, you know, you could say that all my research since has been to effectively explore the roots of that particular interpretation of history, and to shed more light on it, because it's you know, that this is not just an interpretation, but it's a fact that it's what's called the Western Civilization course, and it was developed by the Rockefeller Foundation at the University of Chicago, and it was based on Hegel's philosophy of history, which is basically a propaganda, and it's to teach Western history as the evolution towards secularism. So basically one that begins in Greece, who are supposedly the first philosophers, the first to question the existence of gods and you know, spiritual realities or superstitions, as they would say. And then that progress led to the French Revolution, where you finally have the institution of secular democracy, the separation of church and state, and ultimately the establishment of modern democracy. And, you know, and it's now, of course, the mission of the Western world to impose that system on the rest of the world. So There's a whole aspect of that I studied about that, and I wanted to find out where the heck this came from. Effectively, as I said, it goes back to Hegel. Behind that, it's a Masonic, Kabbalistic, Aryan version of history.
Now, I know one of your first books was called The Dying God, which I always thought was quite an interesting title, because anyone that's looking at that from a spiritual point of view knows that since things like the theory of evolution, the whole idea of God is kind of dying off. Our churches are getting more and more empty. But then it also refers to this whole idea of the sun as it goes down in the ancient world was seen as that. The God dying, as well. So, can you just tell us a little bit about? I mean, in a way, just for me personally, what was is why did you use that title, and what was that book looking at particularly?
Because the dying God is actually it's a term that was first coined by James Frazer, author of the Golden Bough, sort of modern father of anthropology, I think you could say, even maybe religious studies, and he identified this recurring myth of this dying and resurrecting God. Is basically a god who's identified with the sun, who dies in winter on the solstice and then resurrects at the spring equinox. So of course it's believed to be tied to fertility, associated with the planet Venus, whose Latin name is Lucifer. So looking at it more closely, you find that this dying god, which is worshipped by all the civilizations of the ancient world, so Egypt, Greece, Sumeria, Persia, all the major civilizations, and except that what you find that's common amongst all of them is that the dying god was always worshipped as a god of the underworld, so what they call a chthonic deity, so effectively an evil god. And what's tragic is that the worship, his worship was. Is what's called apotropaic magic, which is a kind of magic that you practice to avert evil or to avert the evil of evil gods. So it involved black magic. It involved well known is the human sacrifice. And this is central to the Bible because the whole point of the story of the Bible is that God chose, among the nations of humanity, he chose the Jews to be his emissaries, his examples. They were required to follow the Ten Commandments, and in return, they would be given the right to live. First of all, they would serve as examples for humanity, and then they would be inherit the right to live in the Holy Land. What happens is that when they return to Palestine from Egypt, they're warned to not follow the religion of the Canaanite subjects. And so they're warned repeatedly against this. Not only that, not only the Canaanites, but also things like, communion with spirits, astrology, magic, and those kinds of things, necromancy, or, most of the occult arts, basically. And so the history, really, to sum up a lot of the history of the Old Testament has to do with the Jews basically betraying their covenant and falling into the worship of the god of the Canaanites. In this case, the sun god was Baal, and or sometimes because there's this dying god has a dual aspect, and there's the sun and his opposite darker aspect is represented by Saturn, and so. And so the Bible, he's known as Moloch. In various, like in Greece, he's known as Kronos. And so that's why universally you find in the ancient world there was the sacrifice of children was part of the ritual practice in the worship of Saturn. And so basically they're warned repeatedly that if they don't stop this worship, they'll eventually be taken into captivity. That happens in the 6th century BC. They're taken captive into Babylon. And this is where the central thesis of all my books, I guess you could say, is that it's there that they developed what's called the Kabbalah. And this is a portion of history which a lot of scholars have struggled with because when you look at the Kabbalah, it's a group of ideas that sort of proliferated in later times, in Roman times, and involved a number of simultaneous influences. So like the Eastern mysteries, ancient mysteries, Neoplatonism, Persian sort of Zoroastrianism, and Hermeticism. So when scholars look at this confluence of all these sort of disparate ideas, they've had trouble trying to identify which one was the primary influence. So what I've been proposing is that by tracing it to Babylon, that's where the answer is, because what happens is that that's when sort of early, what if we call it the Kabbalah, was developed, which included basically the worship of the dying god, plus Babylonian astrology, so particularly things like numerology and astrology. And this was a cult that was attributed to the Magi. And so the Magi were historically known as the priests of Zoroastrianism, but these Magi were heretical, and they were basically, demonic worshiping Magi and not true Zoroastrians. And so what happens is that with the spread of the conquest of the Persian Empire, these Magi ideas spread to the various parts of the world. And so when they get to Egypt, they evolved into Hermeticism. When they get to Greece, they evolve into Greek philosophy. And if you find most of the ancient accounts going all the way back, even like some of the earliest accounts claim repeatedly that at least, Pythagoras and Plato himself were in one way or the other students of the Magi. And when you look at the earliest ideas of the Greek philosophers, they're obviously borrowed from various components of the early Magian worship. So to make a long story short, that's the birth of the Western occult tradition. And that tradition evolved into the Essenes, then into aspects of the Islamic world, like the Ismailis, the Assassins, who then supposedly transmitted these ideas to the Templars, and that gives birth, of course, to the tradition of Freemasonry. So the reason I would call it the Dying God is because this dying and resurrecting God is basically the central, basically a stand-in for Lucifer, is the underlying theme that carries forward this whole occult tradition right up until basically the creation of Freemasonry, the Illuminati, and into the 20th century, effectively with the New Age movement.
Well, there's one thing I think that maybe fits into this that you haven't mentioned, which is the Phoenicians, because these guys were obviously quite important in the building of the temple in Jerusalem and the sort of falling of Solomon into sin, and then getting this, bringing in the Phoenicians to build him a temple. And then, of course, the Phoenicians were very closely associated with the Egyptian empires, the pharaohs, and let's not forget, were incredible seafarers and observers of the stars and navigators. In fact, yeah, we have just had some stuff revealed in the British National Maritime Museum about the John Dee and his work in revealing, apparently, in the days in the 1500s where the British Empire was being planned, actually having a load of information about navigation, which had been secret for a very, very long time. And the evidence is quite clear that the Phoenicians did make quite a lot of trips over to the Americas, too. And there is a lot of evidence for that. So I wonder how you think the Phoenicians fit into all this, because they seem to have been very important in terms of alphabets. For example, this whole idea of a phonetic alphabet was the breakthrough in language to be able to make it much easier to write and communicate. Absolutely. And if you look at the Norwegian and the Scandinavian runes, well, they bear a tremendous amount of similarity to these Phoenician letters, which were created, one would imagine many, many years before. But of course, the links were to do with trade, and the Phoenicians were a very secretive bunch. Also, by the way, practiced child sacrifice.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually discussed the Phoenicians quite a bit in my book, The Dying God. There's a number of interesting parallels. So first of all, the thing is about the Jews. In fact, if you go back to Herodotus, he describes the Phoenicians as being a colony of from Egypt who practiced circumcision. So the thing is about the Jews is that, or Israelites, or whatever you call them at that time, they, for the most part, if you know, according to the Bible, were not practicing Judaism. This in fact was the central problem that was being communicated by the Bible. So, you know, to the point where the temple itself became a site of pagan worship. So, you know, effectively the Israelites were indistinguishable from the Canaanites. And these were the people who were known, you know, to the rest of the world as Phoenicians. So I believe that, you know, the Phoenicians would have been Jews or often confused for Jews. And this is how, what, or Israelites, let's say. So when you, you know, a lot of the sources I use, there's two scholars in particular, is Walter Burkert and then Mel West. And they've been bringing some fascinating books. M.L. West is called The East Face of Helicon, and Walter Burkert is called Orientalizing Revolution, because the whole point is that Greek civilization emerged out of contact with Phoenician. And as you mentioned, the alphabet is a key example. The temple construction as well, too, you know, and most of the elements of the cult. I mean, that's why, you know, it's really nonsense that Greece has been turned into this, you know, so-called cradle of Western civilization, when it was fundamentally a Middle Eastern civilization. And, you know, all the elements of its culture came from the East. And what's interesting is that I think it's Amel West or Walter Burkert, why he calls it East Face of Helicon. He says that, you know, it's not even the source of all, most of the elements of Greek civilization is not just from the Middle East, but from Palestine in particular. And there's other aspects as well too. You know, there's the famous case of the Sea Peoples, and there's another scholar, Jewish scholar named Raphael Patai, and he calls it it's a book called Children of Noah, and he proposes that the tribe of Dan were described as you know, people of the sea, and so he proposes that. That's why the book, the subtitle is Jewish Seafaring in Ancient Times or something like that. Because the Sea Peoples, there's a lot of controversy and mystery about who exactly they were. They're people who basically devastated the Mediterranean. I can't remember in what century, but I believe it would have coincided with the century that the Israelites were expected to conquer. Yeah, I think it was like in the 1200s. The century that the Jews would have made their conquest of the Palestine in that area. So I believe that if the tribe of Dan were, you know, also seafarers, then they would have been the Sea Peoples as well.
Right. Okay. So also, the, you know, your, can you just take us through a little bit through your, before we get into this most recent article about David Icke, amongst other things, about your Ordo Ab Caio, because, you know, you have this habit of immediately catching my attention. Ordo Ab Caio is a very important phrase, isn't it? It means order from chaos. It's basically the Naomi Klein's shock doctrine, in a way, where she's pointed out that you know, that there is this kind of disaster capitalism around, a kind of chaos merchants, almost like Law of the Jungle people that go out there, create chaos. In fact, they are really clever at creating terrible situations in order that they can come in and profit from it, and also transform it in a way that they have predetermined. So, you know, this is actually quite important. And it's also, of course, the motto of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry.
Exactly.
With a few quite important people involved in that over the centuries, not least of which is this guy Albert Pike. You know, he was the guy that came up with this idea with Mazzini, who was busy unifying Italy at the time, of having a whole bunch of world wars in order to bring about their control of the planet. So anyway, well, can you just tell us a bit about this Ordo Ab Caio book, because it's your latest, and it'd be nice to get a brief introduction for anyone that's interested in going further into it.
Okay, so just, you know, to work backwards to show you where it is today, You know, there's a proliferation of satanic orders. Most influential and largest is probably the Order of Nine Angles, and they're really the group that sort of connects most of the recent neo-Nazi organizations. And they've adopted a philosophy which they call accelerationism, which is the belief that they need to accelerate all of the circumstances that are supposed to bring about the end times. And I'm saying that because, you know, this is the common thread that unites all of the satanic orders. And I think you trace that all the way back to Albert Pike. So there's also what was called the Satanic International, sorry, the Luciferian International, which was created in the, I think, in the 70s. And again, it's the same thing, the same belief. If you look at the processed church, which is another key unifying factor that links, you know, Charles Manson to the Son Sam killer, to in Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby, which ties in the whole network of the Church of Satan, you know, most of the Laurel Canyon folk rock scene, you know, really that really at the center of kind of the emerging counterculture of the 60s.
Can I just interrupt you? Because, you know, you've got also this amazing situation with this brilliant film, which I watched over Christmas by Roman Polanski, about the Dreyfus Affair, which really does, I think, you know, make it stand out as an incredible incident that went on in the French Republic, absolutely disgraced the French Republic. It's a beautifully made film, but it's been totally boycotted around the Western world. Somehow the financial people or somebody has made sure it's not even available in Britain still or America, because there's been no subtitles made for the film. It's only been seen in cinemas in France, and yet it's an absolute blockbuster, brilliant film by someone who was directly involved in those massacres you were just talking about back in the 1960s.
Yeah, interesting, because, you know, if you look at the French right, modern French fascism, in fact, I think what's his name, Zev Sternhell, he basically traces 20th century fascism to French, earlier French fascism, particularly the Action Française, and Action Française grew out of the Dreyfus Affair. So it's a pivotal incident as far as the history of 20th century fascism.
Anyway, I interrupted you, sorry.
Yeah, so basically, you know, if you look, the processed church is really a key factor here. And so so it's the idea, the what all these Luciferian organizations hold in common, and starting, as I mentioned, starting with Albert Pike, is the belief that they need to bring about the fulfillment of the Book of Revelation. So this is what this is. So the chaos precedes the advent of the Messiah. So they want to accelerate the chaos that is supposed to occur, because they believe that it's going to accelerate the arrival of their Messiah, quote unquote, Antichrist.
Let's just take a look then at this latest thing you've written about David Icke. Now, right at the very beginning of the pandemic, or plandemic, whatever people call it, we had David Icke stating, COVID-19 does not exist. There is no such thing as COVID-19. And, of course, there were quite a lot of people who were sceptical about it, many of whom have actually started to believe this sort of thing. I noticed, by the way, that there was a voracious attack, because I took this quote and I put it up on various platforms. I thought it was a very significant thing for him to say. And it was taken down off of all of them. Even just an audio recording with a picture of David Icke was also taken down. So there was somebody somewhere didn't want really this to be easily out there on the record, and yet many of his followers were taking this kind of stuff on. I'm very interested. Over the years, I've been quite sceptical about Icke. I've had people informing me who say, at least they're good sources, saying that he's something which they call in intelligence parlance a nutter magnet. So he's fed information. He's fed information that they know he will think is true, and so some of it is correct and some of it is incorrect. So He's also very interested in and a big proponent of hallucinogenic drugs, particularly ayahuasca. So what is it that you've teased out about Ike? Because, I mean, there's all sorts of questions about you know, his ability to critique the system whilst not really going along with the idea of journalistic rigor.
Yeah. No, well, that's the first of his faults. You know, if he'll find, he'll often say, I've researched all the research I've done, and he doesn't cite his sources. But if you know, in a lot of cases, it's easy to trace. Like, it'll be people like Fritz Springmeier and things like that. And it's, you know, none of it is very credible. I'd have to say, I mean, like everybody else, I think everybody is always finds it difficult to make sense of Ike, unlike someone like Alex Jones, who's a little bit more transparent. But at the very least, I would say his research is very sloppy. But where he plays a role, so without judging him, the Ike the man, you know, there's enough to condemn his teachings, because they basically serve directly into, as I mentioned, what I call the conspiracy. It's a combination of fascism and New Age teachings, which is not at all contradictory. As you know, the Nazis basically were the first New Age regime. So, that's effectively it. So, it's a long thread. I probably only have a few minutes, but just to give you an idea of what I cover in my article, is that it effectively starts with. As I mentioned, it's like you look at every sort of Illuminati plot. If you start with the French and American revolutions, they all started as anti-establishment movements, right? So the French Revolution was to overthrow the aristocracy. The American Revolution was to overthrow the tyranny of King George. The Russian Revolution was to overthrow, again, the aristocracy and create a dictatorship of the proletariat. And so that mindset, that sort of, controlled opposition continues to be the tactic. What was used in particular was the Protocols of Zion. And this is a mysterious document that appears to parallel, the behind the scenes happenings. But if you look at where that book emerged from, is very suspicious. So It was handed to Sergei Nihilus by Yuliana Glinka, who is a follower of Blavatsky, part of an entire sort of hornet's nest of Russian agents that were circling around. His name is Peter Rutchkovsky, who's the head of Ukraine in Paris. And most of them linked to the Rite of Memphis Mizraim. We're not going to go into details too many to cover there, but basically just to say that it's very suspicious circumstances. The guy who was responsible for then disseminating and popularizing the protocols was a guy named Boris Brassel, who was a double or triple agent working for both the British and Russian Secret Service. A fascinating guy. Despite that he's spreading this document about a, so-called Jewish conspiracy, he was a crypto Jew himself. Teamed up with Henry Ford in particular to publish and spread the protocols. He becomes the member of this organization called the Aufbau. And the Aufbau is basically the source of the Nazi Party. To it belonged Alfred Rosenberg, the chief ideologue, the Aryan ideologue of the Nazi Party, and Erich von Ludendorff, who was a friend of Aleister Crowley.
As soon as you mention Rosenberg, the question has to come up, because there have all been all sorts of doubts and denials about whether he was Jewish or not. Obviously, he's got a Jewish name.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes on and on and on, right? I mean, it's all founded on Jewish Kabbalah. So it's in, so the, you know, at the risk of being controversial, the whole idea of an Aryan race is derived from Jewish Kabbalah. So, basically, it's the sons of God who interbred with the children of Canaan, Atlantis, and became what was called a mixed multitude according to the Jewish Kabbalistic tradition. So Boris Brassel So this Aufbau organization is the organization that introduced the protocols to the Nazis, to Hitler in particular, and influenced them to perceive that the Russian Revolution was a Jewish communist plot, and they had to do something to prevent the same from happening to Germany, and then hence the Nazi Party. So what happens is that Boris Brassall comes to the United States, and he becomes the key finger of behind what's called a branch of the Knights of Malta called the Szyksyni Knights, and also a member of what's called the Order of the Blue Lagoon, which connects most of the far-right figures at the time. Most importantly, he becomes what's called the quote-unquote brain trust of the America First Committee. So the America First Committee is a confluence of all the right-wing organizations of the time, the Silver Shirts, the Bund, the Klan, and funded by the Nazi government in Germany. The goal was to lobby to keep the United States out of World War II. So the key family behind the AFC is the Regnery family. And the Regnery family is the one thread that connects all of the subsequent right-wing tradition in the United States all the way up to the alt-right. And so the AFC evolves into the American Security Council. American Security Council is called basically the heart of the military-industrial complex. So what they did again is they continued to use the same MO as the Nazis, well, they modified it somewhat, but to develop this fear of a communist conspiracy to, you know, bring communism to the United States, that infiltrated, you know, the Communist Party of the United States and created all these communist intellectuals that were attempting to merge us, quote unquote, with the Soviet Union, and in order to justify the military buildup, which was, of course, all done through private corporations who, for the most part, were affiliated with the American Security Council. And so the American Security Council is where you get effectively the John Birch Society. So the John Birch Society is really the key. The main organization was responsible for preserving and perpetuating a sort of a knowledge and awareness about the quote-unquote conspiracy beginning in, they're found in 1958. One member was Roy Cohn, who was the Donald Trump's mentor, one of the key characters of the key conspirators of the 20th century. He also ran a blackmail operation out of the Plaza Hotel, a pedophile blackmail operation. And he's basically, it's that blackmail operation that basically was a direct ancestor of Jeffrey Epstein's operation. And this is key here because this is this pedophile network, blackmail network, which really ties most of these activities. And so it's interesting that it's this same network who developed the QAnon PSYOP. So it becomes this network. So basically, John Birch Society is a front for the Klan. It's connected to all the international right-wing organizations. Roy Cohn is also the head of an organization called Western Goals, and which is connected to the World Anti-Communist League, which is connected to the heroin trade in China. Where else can I go? There's so many connections. So behind it all, the umbrella organization is an organization called the Cercle, the Circle, the Pinay Circle. It's founded by Antoine Pinay in the year before, is it before or after he co-founded Bilderberg? And this was basically a synarchist organization as well. He founded it with head of the Secret Service. His name is Jean Violet. And what's really curious here is that Antoine Pinay was a friend with Raymond Abellio. And Raymond Abellio was another synarchist, leader of a synarchist organization called MSR, which grew out of the Cagoule, which again goes back to the Action Française and the Dreyfus Affair that I was talking about. And Raymond Abellio is an occultist, so he's also considered to be one of the originators of the Priory of Zion myth. And which is basically a synarchist plot. And so the if you look at all the connections, basically the Circle is the key organization behind the Gladio network, a network of right-wing terrorists inspired by Julius Evola. That Gladio network is connected to the Solar Temple, the cult of the Solar Temple. And the cult of the Solar Temple is where you get this confluence of ideas like the Priority of Zion, AMORC, the American Rosicrucian Movement, the I Am Activity, and effectively the history of Martinism. So basically, in a nutshell, that's the network that Ike is affiliated with. For example, one of the primary families, one of the main backers behind this network is the Mellon family, and who have longstanding ties with the OSS, Alan Dulles, and the CIA. One of them, famous one, is Billy Hitchcock, Billy Mellon Hitchcock. He's the one who funded Timothy Leary's Millbrook experiments at his Millbrook estate. His uncle was the British ambassador. It was the American ambassador, British ambassador, and involved in the Profumo affair. And the Profumo affair is key because it was the guy, basically the pimp behind it was Dr. Is it Stephen Ward? So Dr. Stephen Ward is the one who pimped Christine Keeler. He apparently pimped her to JFK, which is how that's tied into that. He also, one of his girlfriends was Marianne Grimstone, the co-founder of the Process Church. And yeah, so that ties the Mellon family. Where was I going with that?
Well, yeah, you were pinning down the, because I mean, I think for most people, we won't be familiar with hardly any of these organizations. Yes. I mean, I personally am with some of them, like the Pinay Circle, for example. Yeah. But for most people, all they see is the Ike, the David Ike website, the David Ike talk, you know, the David Ike Twitter feed, or say, for example, the Alex Jones website, the InfoWars website, you know, so. I think if you could just explain how these almost like shop windows fit in with the what's going on down in the basement, you know, that's where we're heading here, I hope.
Yeah, I remember where I was going now. So New Age movement, of course, traces back to the influence of H.P. Blavatsky and probably most directly to Alice Bailey, one of her more popular students. So Alice Bailey with this other woman named Olga, I can't remember exactly her last name. They founded what's called the Aranos conferences that involved Carl Jung. So these were a series of conferences that basically gave birth to the study of what they call the history of religions that took place in Switzerland. Every year, I think starting around 1932, connected very much to what's called the German Conservative Revolution, which is the movement that basically gave rise to the Nazi Party. And so when Michael Murphy founded the Esalen Institute, he confessed and said categorically that it was inspired by the Aranos conferences. And you find that even in the San Francisco Renaissance is basically a confluence of the influences of, you know, people who belong to the Aranos conferences and who influenced by the German Conservative Revolution. So it's just to say that, you know, the New Age movement has a fascist origin. And so, you know, as wishy-washy and hokey as the Esalen Institute might have seen, under all that is a fascist strain. So ultimately, you know, the New Age movement, their goal is to transition humanity into this age of Aquarius, which is basically a satanic age, and a satanic fascist age. And so this is why when you look at the teachings, so basically. What Ike is doing is effectively merging this idea of a conspiracy with the coming age of Aquarius. So basically, what's happening now, this is what I cover in my article. If you look at what's happening with COVID is that there seems to be a deliberate strategy because Facebook has been targeting the wellness or New Age community with QAnon content. So what's happening is that people who are used to those sort of alternative healing practices and beliefs, who have a sort of a typical mistrust of the current medical establishment, are starting to perceive their opposition to it as part of as being rooted in a conspiracy, and it's because of the right wing influences, it's being identified as a right wing conspiracy. So that's why when most of the opposition that's coming out these days, it tends to be floated by the right. So Fox News is jumping on the bandwagon. You know, people like Tucker Carlson, Ben Shapiro, Rebel News in Canada, who have a hand in the trucker protest in Ottawa. So, it's just part of the way that the fascist underground is again using, manipulating perceptions of the conspiracy to advance their agenda, which is to accelerate, to create chaos, to accelerate the coming of the Antichrist, who is supposed to be arrive with the coming of the Age of Aquarius.
Yeah, so that is, that's quite a lot to take in, particularly when, if you look at the German Greens, I think it's important to stress the role of the Green Party here, is they came in with this kind of New Age agenda, which is turning into something which is actually very aligned with NATO, which I think many people have been quite surprised to see that the German Green Party have been actually quite a part of the
establishment.
Well, yes, but I mean, for example, you would expect them to be talking about, no, we need to get along with the Russians, for example. Yeah. But no, they're taking a NATO line instead. I find that quite shocking, really.
Yeah. Well, it's consistent. Most of the movements are compromised. And of course, that's why, there was an article written, I think it was in the 90s already, when Ike was first started to become popular, and he was identified as an agent who was going to be used to try to infiltrate both the New Age and Green movements.
David Icke has been very much part of this idea that there is no such thing as a virus as well. And we've seen this film, The Terrain, come out in the last couple of weeks, actually, which is saying there no such thing as a virus, but the bacteria are not causing diseases. What's causing the diseases is you being in a bad mood, you being in fear, you being in a polluted environment with... so that your air is not clean enough in your city, and we need to have measures to make the air cleaner because that will do more for your health than, say, traditional drug treatments of some sort. And obviously, the pharmaceutical industry has gone way over the top in many ways in profiteering off of people's ill health. But what do you make of this sort of new move away from the germ? Well, they call it germ theory. Apparently, these germs don't actually cause diseases anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's the thing, is that's getting into the medicine. And, I think what was problematic, if you go back to the example of after 9/11, all the debate got mired into discussions about how the buildings were brought down. When it's a dead end argument, we should be asking why they were brought down. And I think it's the same with COVID. I don't think the concern is the medicine. What's clearly obvious is that this is grossly blown out of proportion, and so the reason is why. And clearly, one of the main goals was to get as many people as vaccinated as possible. So again, I believe the question is what's in it. And why are they wanting to do it? So, the tragedy here is that we have, two sides of this coin that we have to watch for, is that we have to understand that, like, clearly there's some deep collusion happening between Bill Gates, WHO, and Big Pharma, particularly the four companies that he's been funding, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have been funding for at least the last, I believe, 10 years, particularly for our mRNA research. The amount of money, the astronomical sums of money that they've made in the last year. In fact, Moderna, last year, Moderna made revenues of $800 million, and they're scheduled to have, they were scheduled to have earnings. I'm not sure what they was finally calculated at, but $15 to $18 billion. So basically an 18-fold increase in their revenues. So there's, you know, that's clear. But then simultaneously now we've got this other agenda, which is the constant, you know, Hegelian battle between left and right. We've got this danger now of this lurking right, growing right, which I trace back to, because, you know, this is what's important, is that when you look, this is what I was going to say, is that when you look at the particularly one of the main supporters of the QAnon PSYOP is Paul E. Villelli. Paul E. Villelli wrote a paper in the 80s, I believe, with Michael Aquino, the founder of the Temple of Set, former member of the Church of Satan, called Mind War. It was basically about using what they call psychotronics, or using, basically psychic warfare. And of course, the Temple of Set and Michael Aquino were implicated in the Franklin cover-up, which is a pedophile network, again, which is rooted in, originated with Roy Cohn's pedophile network. What's interesting is that the Son of Sam, Maury Terry wrote The Ultimate Evil, and he connected the Son of Sam, not directly, but he basically, the son of David Berkowitz was the Son of Sam, claimed that he had attended pedophile parties at Roy Cohn's house in New York. And of course, the Son of Sam, Terry, connected Berkowitz to a network of Satanists through the Process Church again. And so what happens is that Roy Cohn's pedophile network evolves into a network that was run by Ed Wilson, who is a part of the what's called a secret team headed by Ted Shackley. And this is the network that connects, what was his first name? Keith Gray, who is he was the head of Hill & Knowlton, marketing or advertising firm that used to operate out of what's called the Georgetown Club. And this is in the network. So he was also connected with the BCCI, the World Anti-Communist League. So again, the entire same network of this fascist international. And so Michael Aquino's network, so basically Michael Aquino's Church of Temple Set was connected with this very same core of the satanic pedophile network. And then his co-author is backing this conspiracy theory about a international pedophile satanic network. And that same conspiracy theory is being used again to tap into the New Age movement. The New Age community, using David Icke as a sort of a precedent for merging New Age thinking and right-wing conspiracy theories. And this is how they're kind of expanding their base. This is typically how they work.
Now, in your article, you talk about Alex Jones too, don't you? Yeah. So what do you make of him?
Well, it's the same thing. So Alex Jones, so basically what happens is the John Birch Society and this entire network of the Circle and, you know, the Western Goals, it evolves into the Council for National Policy. So the Council, or CNP for short. So this is basically the network of the far right, in particular the Christian right in the United States. So belonging to it, you have people like the Koch brothers. So the Koch brothers, their father, Fred Koch, was one of the co-founders of the John Birch Society. Charles Koch attended what's called a Freedom School, which was founded by Robert Lefebvre, who was a member of the IM community that was co-founded by William Dudley Paley, who was a part of the AFC. So just to show you this is entire connection, the main backer of the Freedom School was Roger Milliken, who was also the backer of William F. Buckley's National Review. And it's basically the National Review and the John Birch Society which gave birth to what they call the New Right. And of course, William F. Buckley's Knight of Malta, former CIA, Skull and Bones, the list goes on. Attending the Freedom School was also Kerry Thornley, the founder of Discordianism. So you can see this network is always tied to this strand, basically, of this fascist conspiracy in the United States. And so it evolves into CNP, other CNP people are like Steve Bannon, Robert Mercer, who both, of course, founded the Council on Foreign Relations together. And they worked with Cambridge Analytica, worked with Peter Thiel, who is the another PayPal founder. He's also the founder. They worked with his company called Palantir, which was a CIA-backed company, which they helped them help Cambridge Analytica breach the Facebook data, which they used then to target unwitting Americans with Russian-backed fake news. So basically, Alex Jones comes from a he admitted himself, he comes from a John Birch Society and CNP background. And in fact, there's a surprising video that he posted online where he claims that he comes from a tradition. This was a huge clue for me. This is something I've been studying for. I've been trying to find evidence of for the longest time. I couldn't. He said he made it clear himself that he comes from a Rosicrucian tradition that dates back to the Mayflower. And I've been able to back this up, that the Mayflower was basically a ship of Rosicrucians. And he says that this is the tradition that he stems from, that he considers that the real Illuminati, little Illuminati, and he considers Weishaupt's Illuminati to be sort of a counterfeit Illuminati. And so that gives you a taste of where he's coming from. I would suspect. So he says he's not a Mason, but he's reflecting a Masonic background, and he's also reflecting a satanic background. And to support that, his books and movies have been distributed by a company called the Disinformation Company. And this is a company called founded by Metzger. I can't remember what his first name is, but Metzger founded what's called the Disinformation Company, which he said he founded to be a company based on Crowleyan magic. So he also wrote a book of lies, which is a fascinating, very interesting book, because it's an anthology of all the leading Satanists of today. People like particularly the one I can think of is Robert Anton, Peter Lamborn Wilson. And I can't remember the list of all the authors there, but it's basically a who's who of modern Satanism.
Yeah, well, back in 2013, both David Icke and Alex Jones were over in Watford, along with me, actually, although they seemed to studiously avoid me. Yeah. I kept sort of hearing that they might be wanting to say hello, yeah, but they never did. And in fact, yeah, I was interviewed by Paul Joseph Watson extensively, about a 15-minute interview, which never then appeared, right, on the InfoWars website, which was quite an interesting experience. Yeah. The Bilderbergers are quite an interesting lot. Obviously, I've been studying them. I've got their Bilderberg.org, got the Bilderberg.org domain name there. And I just wonder what you make of them, because they've gone underground, supposedly. They've stopped meeting, allegedly. But if you go onto the WikiSpooks website page for 2021, you'll find there's now something like 130, 140 of these Bilderbergers over the last decade or so are in key positions with the scamdemic in all sorts of different ways. So, yeah, for example, inventing this gene therapy, gene splicing technology, all the way through to finance and the drug companies, and obviously also implementing the policies through, yeah, governments and communications. So they seem to be, you know, a lot of Bilderbergers involved in all this, David. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's I think they have a lot of they've got a lot of organizations that, coordinate. And I think the Bilderbergers is one of them. So just the fact that Antoine Pinay was simultaneously founder of Bilderberg and the Circle is a telling fact. So, of course, Peter Thiel has been a regular Bilderberger as well. So, you know,
can I just say about Kissinger, because he's been a massively important figure since the Second World War, really.
Absolutely.
And I just wonder what you make of him. I mean, he almost seems like a sort of you know, certainly when I speak to influential, which I do occasionally, media people, they seem to think that they seem to worship the ground he walks on, and I can't figure out why.
He could be, he's probably the chief world, the grandmaster of Luciferianism on the planet. So what's interesting is that I talked about Raymond Abellio, who is the sort of the origin of the Prior of Zion mythos. He was a friend of Antoine Pinet. And so his protege was a guy named Jean Parvulescu. And Jean Parvulescu's protege is Alexander Dugin. Now, Alexander Dugin is considered they call him Putin's Rasputin, and he's really the key figure behind the alt-right. He's influenced everybody from Steve Bannon to Richard Spencer to, I mean, you name it. I talked at the beginning about accelerationism. So one of the main organizations is a group called the Iron March, and the founder of it claims to have been initiated by Alexander Dugin, which is typical. Like, Dugin is basically the key character that binds most of the Fascist International today. He was a friend also with Claudio Muti, who was a friend of the founder of the Solar Temple, the Gladio Lake Solar Temple. So it just shows you that this connection, this entire network, is very tightly knit. He's also friends with people like Kerry Bolton, who was the main distributor for the Order of Nine Angles. And so, as I mentioned, so if you go back now to Peter Thiel, and this is what I discussed in my book, is that he is a proponent of a political philosophy called neo-reaction. And it was developed by Curtis Yarvin and this philosopher named Nick Land. And Nick Land has basically endorsed the writings of the Order of Nine Angles. And he developed what's called, he's the one who originally developed the concept of accelerationism, which is based on his study of postmodernism. And also influenced again by the Process Church. Because if you look at a lot of what their strategy is, like these modern neo-Nazi organizations, goes back to Charles Manson, who wanted to start a race war, because Charles Manson himself was influenced by the Process Church, and again the idea about accelerating during the end times. So they believe that by, particularly the Order of Nine Angles, they believe in infiltrating pretty much any group that they can, left, right, you know, center, green, New Age, to try to influence them into contributing to the chaos. And I think, considering these connections, you can kind of see where is the Luciferian basis behind people like Alex Jones and David Icke.
Yeah. What about the Epstein-Maxwell ring? Because that seems to be also quite an important. You've mentioned Epstein a few times, and mm-hmm. and this seems to be quite amazingly important in a way. Because what's happened is, I make no apologies for saying this. I feel like poor old Prince Andrew, who was drawn into this thing. It looks as if he may have had sex with a 17-year-old prostitute, which is not a crime. You know, it's not a good thing to do. You have to remember, of course, he's been divorced for 25 years. He's actually a very lonely guy, quite a sad character in some ways.
Yeah.
Apparently, the Queen is, you know, she feels quite sorry for the guy, you know, whereas most of her other siblings have gone and made up, you know, more successful relationships, and Andrew has kind of failed in that way. But he's been basically character assassinated for this. as a result of his association with Epstein. And there's been also accusations. Oh, well, he knew Epstein was a child abuser, but he went back to see him anyway and as his friend. Well, it certainly doesn't look as if he went to see him as his friend. If you look at the photograph, I think it was in Central Park of Epstein and Andrew right. walking along yeah. together, where Andrew looks as if he's questioning Epstein about these previous relationships that have happened on his premises, about how old the women are, etc. That's what looks to be in their expression. And there's a kind of smirk on Epstein's face, as if to say, I've got you kind of thing. And so this does seem to be an operation which was also aimed at the British royal family.
Mm, yeah, I don't know about that.
But I mean, the real question here is that there were hundreds of people that went through the Epstein-Maxwell mill that were filmed and will now possibly be being blackmailed.
That's it. And that's the real purpose. And again, it's the same. It's a practice that goes all the way back to at least Roy Cohn. So, I mean, if you look at the degree of collaboration worldwide to implement the COVID restrictions and mandates, you have to wonder to what extent blackmail might be part of the mechanism. Because, you know, effectively, it's funny. I just can't understand that of all the relationships that are being highlighted, emphasized with Epstein, probably the closest and the one that needs the most scrutiny is his long-term relationship with Bill Gates. And that's the real one. So I think here, then that this is where we have the clue to understand what COVID is all about, that it's a transhumanist agenda that, you know, an earlier article I wrote, I show that Bill Gates, you know, openly confesses, boasts that he was a friend. He takes basically David Rockefeller as mentor and modeled his career after his, which is basically to use, you know, I mean, the Rockefeller Foundation was the main tool, other than the Ford Foundation, was the main cover for CIA activity throughout the 20th century. So, you know, what is he up to with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is now the largest charitable, it's funny to call it that, charitable foundation in the world. And simultaneously, Jeffrey Epstein was also a very important funder of transhumanist projects. You know, if you look at, there's a whole network that's not talked about, which is his links to MIT and, you know, people like, what's his name? I can't remember his name. One of the founders of modern day computing. I can't remember his name. So, I mean, this is ultimately the goal. The goal is to create, you know, a controlled human population through the control, through digital control, through digital means. So through our phones, through our online activity, through social media, right? This is always been, this is a long-term plot. So, you know, I'm speculating. I think, I don't think it's speculation to propose that there is a joint mission between COVID and transhumanism. I think where speculation is, where is it going specifically?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, certainly that there is some now an amazing precedent being set for this kind of gene editing technology to be introduced into human bodies without a by your leave. Mm-hmm. To wrap up, can you say what you think about the, because there's obviously been a big reaction in Canada against the vaccine mandates. We don't have them here in the UK. In fact, they seem to be really backing off. But Trudeau and Macron, both disciples of the Church of Klaus Schwab, who seems to have kind of done a hostile takeover for the United Nations, the Canada doesn't seem to be taking these vaccine mandates lying down.
No. There's Angus Reid, was like a polling company in Canada, and they just, I think it was last week, they measured that support for the truckers. They stated it actually quite nicely. They said, you know, despite whatever the truckers might stand for, they believe that they have a right to oppose the mandates, and it's the 47% of Canadians basically support the movement. So it's a real tight spot for Trudeau. He imposed emergency measures, which is normally reserved for times of war or acts of terrorism. So it's completely absurd. But again, the dialectic is at play here. The trucker convoy does have ties to the right. The same right wing cabal. This is what I trace in my book. You'll see, organizations like Rebel News have ties to what's called the David Horowitz the Freedom Circle, which is tied to the Center for National Policy, which is what Paul Vallely belongs to. He's the QAnon promoter. Basically the Rebel News has some ties to the alt-right. It's a classic example of the undercurrent of fascism trying to use this opportunity to try to recruit people unknowingly to their agenda, and they're succeeding. So I think they're not, of course, going to dupe a large portion of the population, but they are going to win some people. And unfortunately, a part of the New Age movement, of course, is being sucked into it now as well.
Now, I know Catherine Austin Fitz has put it pretty succinctly. It's a war on God, and God's going to win.
That's it. That's it. So it just depends on whose side you're on and when the victory comes.
So I guess, it's for some people, particularly the ICISTs and the Alex Jones followers, they got to work out, they're following these people, but they may be basically going straight down a rabbit hole.
Pied Pipers, yeah. Absolutely. They're serving the conspiracy, more directly than pretty much any other group. They're falling like right in line with it. These are the Pied Pipers of the conspiracy. Alex Jones, it's a conspiracy. The true dupes are not the people who are conspiracy deniers. The true dupes, the true contributors to the progress of the conspiracy tend to be those who think they're opposing it. I think the lesson here is always, the problem is that these people are so desperate. They're smart enough to recognize that something is up, something's not going quite right, but they're too anxious for change. They're too anxious to drop their support behind people who say the things they want to hear. And that's the real danger. A lot of, like, the Trump supporters did the same thing. He said all the right things, and they were ready to excuse any of those other actions, despite the fact that his mentor was Roy Cohn, who is basically the arch conspiracy behind the real, basically the guy who filled the swamp in the first place. People need to learn that you need to judge your leaders, you judge the people you join by their actions. And, frankly, Jesus said something along the same lines, right? He said you judge people by their fruits, right? Not by their words.
No, definitely not. And it's funny, isn't it, that the idea that these people are pointing at what they see as a herd of sheep just doing what the government want, but actually they are themselves part of a herd of goats. So anyway, whereabouts do people find your AutoAb KO online, and where can we get your books, David?
Right, so I have a website, which is ordoabko.ca. My entire book is online as web pages. From the homepage and most other pages, you'll find links to the print version and Kindle version, which you can get on Amazon.
Okay, the king of the dot joiners, David Livingstone, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tony.